This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 13th of November 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 12th of November 2015, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Attack on Homes, Hospital recovers to be in good health, and protesters are causing alarm. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
And this is Attack on Homes. Winchester must fight to protect its council housing from controversial plans to extend the right to buy, a meeting heard. Opposition city councillors warned against the government's, quote, daylight robbery, unquote, of affordable homes as Conservative leaders urged them to unite in lobbying for the district. A lengthy debate on the council, at the council last Wednesday, heard cross-party warnings over the perceived dangers of allowing housing association tenants to buy their properties. Chancellor George Osborne is particularly funding the measure by forcing local authorities to sell their most expensive homes. But high house prices in Winchester mean around 1,200 of its 5,000 council houses would be sold off under currently assumed thresholds. Liberal Democrat councillor Jamie Scott and Jane Rutter spoke of, quote, injustice and daylight robbery, unquote, while councillor Amber Thacker, Conservative member for Cheriton and Bishop Sutton, said villages would, quote, die if affordable homes are not available for young families. Lib Dem group leader, Councillor Lucille Thompson, said, "We are seeing an unprecedented attack on social housing, not really seen since the 1980s when Margaret Thatcher introduced right to buy for council houses without allowing councils to replenish their stock by keeping all the proceeds. This latest round of legislation threatens our ability both to build new homes for the 2,000 plus on our waiting list and to continue our repairs programme." Winchester and Chandlesford Conservative MP Steve Brine voted for the bill at second reading last week, along with Mearn Valley MP George Hollingbury, but raised concerns about exemptions in rural areas. Tory council leader Stephen Godfrey told the meeting, "The Housing and Planning Bill has many fine characteristics, one of which is to reduce the amount of money that tenants pay for living in social housing. Now really, do you think that's a bad thing? Tell your tenants that." Winchester owns nearly a quarter of Hampshire's council houses outside Southampton and Portsmouth, but just 4% of its housing association properties. Selling council homes to fund the new right to buy would therefore force Winchester tenants to subsidise other areas, Lib Dems argued. The anger of many opposition councillors is stoked by the fact that the council bought its housing stock back from the government in 2010 in a bid to invest locally. Councillor Janet Berry, Labour group leader, said, "Would the council be happy to accept the selling off of the Guildhall, its car parks or any other of its valued assets in order to fund a project of the Chancellor?" Councillor Caroline Horrell, Conservative portfolio holder for housing, warned against speculation over the policy and urged councillors to work together in adapting to the changes. Council overwhelmingly agreed to raise further concerns with the government.
Hospital recovers to be in good health. Health watchdogs have given a thumbs up to services at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital, but said work still needs to be done. An inspection by the Care Quality Commission found that overall the hospital had improved since it was blasted 2 years ago for failing to have enough staff on the wards. Now the hospital has been given an overall rating of good after it was inspected during the summer. Inspectors found the trust which runs it, Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust, to be outstanding for providing caring services, but they said that work was still to be done in some areas. Chief Inspector of Hospitals, Professor Sir Mike Richards, said there were significant numbers of vacancies in some areas, with wards relying on nursing staff working longer hours or by sharing staff or staff skills across shifts. At times, some people were waiting too long in the emergency department. While end-of-life care services at the hospital were considered outstanding, its outpatients and diagnostic services were criticised. MP Steve Brine praised the trust for turning the hospital around. He said, "The rating HHFT have received is significant, and huge credit should go to the management and staff in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover as a result. There can, however, be no question of complacency. We must maintain safe staffing levels in acute care."
Protesters are causing alarm. Winchester's council boss has accused campaigners of needlessly alarming the public by dragging the battle over Silver Hill into the redevelopment of a GP practice. Councillor Stephen Godfrey looked to assure residents at St Clement's Surgery will be rebuilt as part of a £150 million redevelopment before the old site is bulldozed. The Winchester Deserves Better campaign against Silver Hill is backing a petition by patient Jill Davies urging the council to separate the projects. They say the surgery's 17,000 patients are being put at risk by tying the plans to Silver Hill. The petition of 422 signatures was presented to the City Council last week. Ms Davies expressed fears that planning and construction of the surgery will be delayed if it remains tied to Silver Hill. She said, "We are worried that the practice will have to move out of the centre of Winchester, or worse still, close down altogether." Councillor Godfrey told the council that most delays had been caused by campaign leader Kim Gottlieb's challenges to Silver Hill. He said, "I'm afraid that some people have been winding up the public unnecessarily and inappropriately. It will be finished before the land and the current surgery building is on need to be used for the redevelopment of Silver Hill. The Silver Hill construction schedule is set to be revealed by developer TH Real Estate, formerly known as Henderson, this month." Councillor Godfrey added, "The fundamental reason why there have been delays is that those who try to stop or delay the Silver Hill development means that we can't get the old building purchased by the developer. If there's no purchaser for the old building, the doctors can't move." Councillors approved a new business case for the surgery ahead of doctors signing the lease. Councillor Godfrey said the scheme was only just viable and suggested significant sums of money were needed to subsidise it. Councillor Gottlieb denied his support for the petition was related to his legal action against Silver Hill.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Baron, Susie Caroline Baron, on the 2nd of November, aged 45. Byatt, David Byatt, on the 7th of November, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 80. Gray, Olive Gray, on the 5th of November, at Flowerdown Care Home, Winchester. Messenger, Dennis James Messenger, on the 5th of November at Berwick Court Nursing Home. Murphy, Muriel Ivy Murphy, at home on the 28th of October, aged 85. Talt, John Oliver Talt, at the Countess of Brecknock Hospital on the 5th of November, aged 73. Utting, Barbara Utting, on the 1st of November at Otterbourne Grange, aged 92. Next, we have Christian comment.
This week is written by the Reverend Graham Bowkett, Rector of Upper Itchen Benefice and Assistant Area Dean of Alresford, and he entitles it James Bond and the Priesthood. The other day, I managed to persuade my wife to come with me to watch the new James Bond film. We went on a dreary Tuesday morning, which meant we practically had the auditorium to ourselves. I really enjoyed the film, action-packed and exciting. I particularly liked the bit where our hero, James Bond, is asked by the Bond girl, Madeleine Swann, why he chose the life of an assassin. "Well, it was either that or the priesthood," he replied. Now, this reminded me hugely of the text from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 17, where Jesus is asked by St. Peter what he would have done had he not been the Son of God and the Messiah. Jesus answering that actually he felt his vocation might have been towards working for MI6. I thought this a very interesting answer, not least because assassins and priests would seem to be poles apart. In fact, the whole James Bond theme is very priestly. A desire to see good triumph over evil, a striving for peace, justice, equality, and the common good. James Bond does this his way, and the priest by praying and acts of good works. I have the privilege of writing this today in the week we have our remembrance services and parades. This Sunday just passed, we saw thousands of people in our diocese and millions in our country and across the Commonwealth come together to remember and give thanks for the sacrifice made by those servicemen and women who have served and lost their lives in war, a sacrifice made in the hope of freedom, liberty, and security. The trouble is, we still live in a paradise lost. It is a reality for all of us. Paradise lost is an act of choice. Above all, the deep particular psychology of all humanity forced to judge or to choose whether to do right or wrong. Free choice is at the very centre of what humanity is. God leaving us free to choose, free to make choices, even when we know it'll lead to catastrophe, destruction, and death. It is, I am afraid, a reality as unavoidable as our own eventual demise. Bad people choose to do bad things. Good people resist evil with all their strength. Jesus said, "There's no greater love than this, to give one's life for another," as quoted in John chapter 15, verse 13. And whilst those words did not refer to war, they resonate loudly the sacrifice made by so many for us during war, defending this beautiful and great realm. If anyone ever visits the cemeteries of northern France and Belgium, if anyone visits the Menin Gate listing the names, it is impossible not to be moved by the visible testament to the cost of war, name after name after name. Ask, how do we honour their sacrifice? We do so by loving God, loving what is good, loving our neighbour, working for peace, equality, and prosperity for all. That is how we honour those who gave their life for freedom.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start now with the first letter.
And this first letter kicks off on a rather intellectual level. It's entitled Latin Grammar, and it's from John Robinson. Sir, I refer to the letter last week from Councillor Peter Edgar, November the 5th. He is rightly proud to have graduated from the University of Winchester, or King Alfred's College, as it presumably was back then, and after to have been a teacher for 34 years. However, he doesn't say what he studied or what he taught, but I assume it wasn't Latin. He describes himself as an alumni, which is impossible unless he is somehow a plural person, alumnus being the correct form. Initially, this amused me, but then I was concerned when I read that he holds the Hampshire County Council portfolio for education. That's from John Robinson, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
This letter is written by Robert Fowler, and it's headed Strong Opinions. Sir, I was astounded to read that councillors were told that public objection to the draft local plan was remarkably limited, as the Chronicle, October the 29th. This is patently untrue in Alresford and is a twisting of the facts by Winchester City Council. There were 565 Alresford objections to individual points in the draft plan. These objections represent a quarter of the 2,400 households in a town with 5,500 people, clearly showing the strength of feeling in Alresford. Compare this with the total Winchester area response of approximately 1,150 comments to the plan, with the City Council recording only 75 comments in a population of 42,000. Needless to say, there is much resentment in Alresford about the way in which the site selections were made by council officials who have ignored or summarily dismissed serious points of contention. This arrogance was also demonstrated at public meetings in 2013 and 2014 when the overwhelming views were opposed to overdevelopment on one single site. So many of us are not surprised that this all points to the council having made up their minds very early on and indicates that they are determined not to be put off by genuine public opinion. There is obviously a parallel here with the public's objections to the Silver Hill development. The draft plan is due for public consultation in early December, and we hope that residents of Alresford will again show their displeasure in having to accommodate nearly 400 houses lumped onto the outskirts of this elegant Georgian town against the wishes of the majority of the residents. It is written by Robert Fowler, Sunhill Crescent, Alresford.
Pamela Johnston entitles her letter Cathedral Crucial. Sir, this week's correspondence columns at the Chronicle of October the 22nd made uncomfortable reading. In the centre of Winchester, we have one of the foremost examples of medieval architecture in Europe, built over a period of over 1,000 years, preserved in time of war, famine, plague, up to the present time. The whole history of our country, and much besides, is encapsulated here. It seems mean-spirited to resent making a contribution to the preservation of this place, whatever one's own religious views. At least most of us would see it as an expression of human intelligence, imagination, and creative energy. Many would see a divine hand at work under its many and various manifestations. However we express it, Most people see the cathedral as a place where many through the ages have found joy and peace, a place we can turn to and feel uplifted, a place which deserves our support and our generosity. Pamela Johnston, Abbots Barton.
This next letter is from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, the City Councillor for Itchen Valley Ward, and it's entitled Practice Hopes. Sir, the petition Jill Davis presented on behalf of 400 residents to the council last week was a complete success because it put the issue of the replacement St Clement's surgery firmly into the public domain. Councillors of all shades were both reassuring and indignant about the concern that the practice and its 17,000 patients could be left without a home as a result of the commencement of works on Silver Hill. That was, and still is, a possibility because the City Council has failed to progress the provision of a new surgery sufficiently in advance so as to ensure that it is built, fitted out, and ready to operate from before the old surgery has to be vacated. Now that councillors are aware of this possibility, I am confident that they will not allow it to happen, though the practical necessity of treating the new surgery as a separate project has yet to be taken fully on board. Also helpful was the leader's assurance, in response to my questioning, that Henderson will be legally prevented from seeking possession of the old surgery until the new one is completely ready. But if and how that is to be put into effect remains to be seen. Having been blighted by the threat of demolition by over a decade, the St Clement's surgery urgently needs new premises, and regardless of what happens to Silver Hill, the council has a duty to provide it. As Jill Davis and many others recognise, decoupling the projects is the only practical approach to take, as matters are already complicated enough. That's from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, City Councillor, Itchen Valley Ward.
R.D. Wilkinson, who is a church warden of St Matthew's Church, Week, writes, "Working to repair at-risk church. Sir, in your article, Counties Heritage Sites Make Risk List, that's October the 22nd, you report that St Matthew's Church in Winchester has been put on the English Heritage Risk List for problems including the condition of structural supports in the bell turret and west balcony. It is the case that the roof of the church and the structural supports referred to do require urgent attention. With the support of the Heritage Lottery Fund and from the local and church communities, we are addressing the problems and hope that the church will before too long be repaired and removed from the at-risk list. Meanwhile, may I reassure all those who may be visiting or using the church that there is no immediate danger of injury or damage from the problems that have been identified." It's written by R.D. Wilkinson, Church Warden, St Matthew's Church, Week.
Chris Higgins writes about an innovative plan. Sir, there is a solution to the serious traffic congestion in Winchester, which is bound to get much worse over the next few years as more houses are built, especially at Barton Farm and Pitt. The very real concerns expressed in these columns by Richard Gibson, letters of October the 29th, and Peter Collins and Phil Gagg in the letters of November the 5th, indicate that the highway authorities are sleepwalking into a traffic congestion crisis, for which they appear to have no solution. Ben Hamilton Bailey, a well-respected traffic consultant from Bristol, gave an excellent and entertaining lecture to the City of Winchester Trust's AGM on September the 28th, in which he demonstrated innovative ways to address these concerns. His enlightened response is informed by international best practice from mainland Europe and North America. Ben's philosophy is radical and includes removing traffic lights to allow vehicles to proceed cautiously but more freely, and a significant reduction in signage, which is often unnecessary and confusing. Because it's out of their comfort zone, Ben's theories still make highway engineers nervous, although where implemented, his ideas have significantly reduced congestion and improved the environment. It would be irresponsible not to address our traffic problems when 2,300 more cars are expected on our roads. Before it is too late to smell the coffee, I'd urge our traffic engineers at both Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council to wake up and smell the diesel fumes. They should engage Ben Hamilton Bailey to undertake a comprehensive study of Winchester's traffic problems as a matter of great urgency. Ben would find a solution and improve the quality of life for the citizens of Winchester, but it will take courage and vision to deliver it. Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester.
This letter from Dick Selwood is entitled Leggett's Legacy, and I think you will need to listen carefully and concentrate to follow it. I had a job when I first read it. Sir, entertaining as Crispin Drummond's My Winchester letters October the 30th was, his comment on Henry Beaufort cannot go uncommented on. The son of John of Gaunt, he was half-brother to Henry the IV, served as Chancellor of England, was Bishop of Winchester for over 40 years and was in post at the time of Agincourt. He was also a cardinal and papal legate. He presided over the trial of John of Arc. He did not found St. Cross. Henry of Blois did that 300 years earlier in 1132. Instead, he created a second charity, the Almshouse of Noble Poverty, to run alongside the hospital. To house this, he completed the quadrangle of St. Cross that we see today. All of this provides good reason to name a Winchester secondary school after him. Dick Selwood, Northview, Winchester.
This is written by Valerie Roberts, headed Trick for Treaters. Sir, what a great idea to put a full page in the Hampshire Chronicle on October the 29th to warn people that you don't want any trick-or-treat visitors on Halloween night, October the 31st. Ideal for putting in your front window or glass front door. Well done, you. Written by Valerie Roberts, Haseley Road, Twyford.
Beverly Morgan entitles her letter, or his letter, Investigate Plan. Sir, Wintonians should applaud Mr. Gibson for his initiative in discovering that officers in neither the City Council nor Hampshire County Council appear to have planned for the traffic impact of the various housing developments, such as Barton Farm, the so-called Winchester Village, the police headquarters, as well as the numerous infilling projects on city traffic, the letters of October the 29th. This, if true, is an appalling state of affairs. He calls for further investigation by your newspaper. I urge the editor to respond. Beverly Morgan, St. Cross Road, St. Cross.
Unfair austerity, writes Paul Openshaw. Sir, you claim, Chronicle, Leader, October the 29th, that there is, quotes, clearly a mandate, unquote, for austerity in Winchester. But I doubt it. Some 55% voted Conservative in the constituency, not incidentally remotely the same as the City Council area, although no doubt the argument is still true, but that does not mean they voted specifically for austerity. The government's recent problems within their own party over tax credits prove my point. In Eastleigh, please try and remember not all your readers live in Winchester, only 42% and nationally 36.9% voted Conservative. The government's austerity package is justified only by the discredited first-past-the-post electoral system. any alternative system will deliver coalition government, and in case anyone doubted it at the time, you can now see what a powerful moderating influence the Lib Dems were on David Cameron's first administration. Moderation, generally speaking, is a good thing. Paul Openshaw, White Hart Road, Fair Oak, Eastleigh.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to items of historical interest, which we have from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
200 years ago was November the 13th, 1815. Telegraph trial, London. An experiment of the telegraphs invented by Admiral Sir John... Sorry, I'll read that again. Admiral Sir Home Popham... is about to be tried between the Admiralty and Sheerness, and places for their erection are now selecting. The machine consists of an upright staff from whence two arms project, one at the top and the other near the centre. By the combinations produced from these, upwards of 2,000 changes can take place, a greater number than the one now in use can possibly give by some hundreds.
100 years ago, November the 13th, 1915, recruitment drive. Lord Derby's recruiting scheme, the success of which is to some extent reflected in the daily arrival of recruits at Winchester, has furnished the citizens with a reminder of the great rush to the colours of 12 months ago. This is a war of attrition, and not only have the battalions in the firing line to be kept up to strength, but there must be an equally large army in training to relieve them. The work of local canvassing has started in real earnest this week. In many cases, we believe the canvassers have found that the subject of the visit is already in khaki.
50 years ago, November the 13th, 1965, Bonfire Night Carnival. Winchester's November the 5th celebrations, organised by Round Table, have now become more like a carnival, and are regarded as a regular annual institution after only 6 years since their revival. It is now the only event in the year, apart from Christmas shopping, which brings citizens out into the streets in their thousands. Last Friday was no exception to the string of successful evenings. There were nearly a score of floats and walking exhibits, a record number, while on Oram's Arbour, the crowds appeared bigger than last year, the weather, dry and not too cold, no doubt helping a great deal.
And finally, from 25 years ago, November the 9th, 1990, singles housing crisis. Single people are among those experiencing the most urgent need for housing in the current accommodation crisis, according to a new report. The report comes from Eastleigh's Special Needs Housing Forum, whose members come from the Winchester Health Authority, Social Services, the Probation Service, Eastleigh Borough Council, and many housing associations and local groups dedicated to the welfare of special groups. It examines the housing problems faced by groups, including people with physical and mental disabilities, those with mental health problems, ex-offenders, young, single homeless people, and women with children.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. That will be followed by letter from Westminster and then first person.
And the editorial comment is entitled Disquiet Over More House Sales. This newspaper has misgivings over government plans to allow housing association tenants the chance to buy their homes. Disquiet shared by many councillors of all parties. It may have superficial attractions, but one only has to look at how it has worked in practice with council houses. It is clear that since the 1980s, that policy changed the social makeup of Winchester. Today, fewer poorer people live here, replaced by richer private tenants and students. Proponents argue money will be set aside for house building. But in reality, as Barton Farm shows, there are many people in this city with a negative view of new homes, even though lots live in houses built since the 1960s.
Letter from Westminster this week is written by George Hollingbury, MP for Meon Valley. The government has pledged to get 1 million homes built in the UK by 2020 in a move that should be welcomed across all communities. The housing shortage is one of this country's most pressing problems, and one consequence, according to some studies, is that people are unable to afford a deposit on a house until they are in their late 30s. This so-called generation rent has been a victim of a failure by many governments, local authorities, and the construction industry to build enough housing, so something has to be done to make them into generation buy. But this country cannot simply build its way out of this crisis, and make no mistake, that's exactly what it is. To do so would mean launching into a construction programme that would eclipse anything attempted in post-war Britain to find homes for those bombed out during the Second World War. First, we'd all have to build our way out of the shortfall that already runs into millions of homes, while more demand comes online from a growing population and more people living alone. And then we'd have to overtake the demand for years to build up enough housing stock to alleviate future problems. With the best will in the world, I don't think that's going to happen. So government and local authorities have to get creative. And this is where the Housing and Planning Bill comes in. Not just with the headline grabbing 1 million homes in 5 years' time, but with a host of other initiatives that will help this crisis. This means speeding up the planning process to get homes built, building more starter homes for those under 40 to be sold at a 20% discount, and extending right to buy to housing association tenants. Other areas include forcing local authorities to grant self or custom developments to meet demand, tackling rogue landlords, and, subject to a consultation, making compulsory the so-called pay-to-stay scheme, where high-income social tenants earning £40,000 in London and £30,000 elsewhere pay a market rent as opposed to a social rent. The scheme is currently at the discretion of social landlords with tenants earning over £60,000. On the planning front, the bill asks for powers to be given to the Secretary of State for the first time to intervene in the local and neighbourhood plan-making process to speed things up when councils are taking too long. Local authorities will have to keep a register of brownfield land, and there will be a new system of allowing ministers to grant planning permission for housing on sites identified in the registers. There is no doubt that some elements of this bill are controversial. There are fears over the compensation grants to be paid to housing associations after selling homes at a discount. But the country has to do something to address this crisis. The bill is now going through Parliament, and there is likely to be a great deal of debate and, of course, amendment. But I think this is a radical attempt to tackle the problem, and it needs to be looked at closely. That's written by George Hollingbury, the MP for Meon Valley.
This is Joanna Lewis's column, and it's headed Silent Tears in Hyde. A few weeks ago, residents of Hyde gathered at St Bartholomew's Church to honour the 77 men from its community who perished in the First World War. Thanks to an impressive local living history initiative, the personal profiles, family and homes of each soldier have been painstakingly researched. The Winchester Fusion Choir movingly sang popular songs from the war. Major General Sir Anthony Walker narrated the main events of that conflict. Finally, the evening came to a climax when the name age and rank of the fallen were read out. Many of us were reduced to silent tears. My own thoughts turned to Leonard George Lewis, just a teenager when he landed in northern France in 1914. My grandfather survived battles at Ypres and the Somme. He was one of the lucky ones to return home, albeit wounded. He never spoke about the horrors he saw, nor mentioned the survivor's guilt he might well have carried around. But my father and uncles, as young boys, remember sometimes being woken up by the sound of his nightmares. One time, he survived a night lying in no man's land with a bullet lodged in his neck, uniform and skin torn from him, his barbed wire mattress. How lonely he must have felt. How brave he was not to give up hope. Exactly how the experience of conflict goes into shape the lives of combatants who return to civilian life has long occupied historians. The career of the mid-20th century Conservative Prime Minister Harold Macmillan is a fascinating case in point. Badly wounded in the First World War and slowly nursed back to health by his mother, he was left with a lifelong disability. Despite having all the insouciance of an Edwardian Tory grandee, during his political career he campaigned for better social and living conditions for the poorer families and presided over the fast-track liquidation of the British Empire in Africa during the early 1960s. Macmillan was brave enough to break with party tradition on empire, to the ire of many Tories. He put his version of the bigger picture above the party. We still debate whether it was more his experience in combat, his choice of advisers, or his experience of the family business that turned him into a maverick and made him the right leader at the right time. Sadly, we don't have such leadership here today. If we did, this market town would not still be living with the Silver Hill pantomime. We do have, thankfully, a number of Tory councillors who have been brave enough to slip free from the party whips because they saw how rules have been broken, how plans were grossly inappropriate and inadequate, and how the people of Winchester were being taken for a ride. In recent days, the warnings and predictions of those brave few have proved right. It seems that the financial calculations relating to the current scheme, which were originally withheld, will prove that Henderson misled the public. The Freedom of Information Commissioner has judged it is in the public interest. These figures are published. Yet council leaders still refuse to publish the details unless Henderson agrees first. For private eye, at least, Christmas has come early. And who knows, by the new year, there may well be a new carry-on film released. Of the 17,000 patients at St Clement's, if they ever get a new surgery, it will be because of the rebels pushed the issue into the public domain to ensure that it wasn't fumbled over and then dropped into the yawning chasm in competence between the council and the developer. If the priceless Roman and medieval archaeological remains which lie beneath the site are ever investigated and preserved, it will only be thanks to those who withstood the political slingshots, nasty barbs and bureaucratic mudslinging. The farcical battle of Silver Hill has rumbled on longer than World War I and World War II combined. Isn't it time we made Henderson history?
Few items of what's on, mainly centred around the cathedral. The Christmas market starts on Thursday of next week, that's 19th of November, and it will be open from 10 a.m. really up until Christmas. On Thursday the 26th of November, the Winchester Music Club is giving a performance of Handel's Messiah in the cathedral. For tickets for that, you should telephone 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Then the next day, Friday the 27th of November, is the official opening of the Christmas market, even though it has been in operation for the previous week, and that will feature a lantern parade through the city. On Saturday the 28th of November, in the cathedral, there's the Advent carol service at 6:30, sung by the full cathedral choir. On Thursday the 3rd of December, again in the cathedral, Naomi House and Jack's Space are having a special service called Light Up a Life. That starts at 7:15, and to reserve a place, you need to telephone 01962 760 060. That's 01962 760 060. And then on Friday the 11th of December, again in the cathedral at 7 p.m, there is the annual Christmas concert, which is hosted this year by BBC South Today presenter Sally Taylor. And tickets for that are available from the cathedral box office, 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Lighting up times today, Friday the 13th of November. The sun rose at 20 past 7 in the morning and will set at 20 past 4 in the afternoon. Next Wednesday, sunrise is at 25 past 7 in the morning and sunset is at a quarter past 4 in the afternoon. If you know someone else who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. There is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We've discovered another letter which Margot will now read.
And it's from the familiar name of Keith Webb, who has written a lot of letters in the past. He titles this one, Fly Tipping Risk. Sir, last week you were reported that the County Council is considering closing some recycling centres or introducing charges. This would immediately lead to fly tipping. The cost of clearing rubbish dumped on rural roadsides is enormous. Before these centres opened, everything from old mattresses and sofas, building materials and sacks of waste was just discarded. My experience of Winchester's recycling centre at Bar End convinces me that such places must continue. Hundreds of vehicles visit daily, proving the need for somewhere to take the rubbish that will not fit into our bins. The recycling rate is now over 90%, and those who run the centres are to be commended. Once we could burn our garden rubbish, but now several huge bins each day end up Veolia's composting sites, such as the one at Chilbilton. Over several months, the result is fine sieved compost. This is excellent for our gardens. I have recently dug several tons of the end product, ProGrow, into my vegetable garden. From previous experience, I know how beneficial it will be. Huge quantities of scrap metal are sold on for reuse. Used wood is chipped for fuel, and even our light household waste is now also incinerated as fuels instead of going for landfill. Much of what some throw out as waste is sold and reused. It would be perfectly possible to completely furnish a house over a short time at minimal cost. This is a godsend for those setting up home for the first time or students furnishing empty rooms. The dump also acts as a social centre. One meets so many friends there. There is no shame in scavenging through what others no longer need. I've lost count of the many useful things I have brought back, from furniture, plant pots, garden tools and wheelbarrows, to books, wine racks and reusable timber. Judging from the numbers I see rummaging through discarded clothes, many add to their wardrobes too. We should all lobby our councillors to point out how short-term economy will end up costing far more in the long run, and that doing away with these facilities is totally irresponsible. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
We now move on to items of general news interest.
Cities lit up on TV. This is about the Rickshaw Challenge, and there is another article after this one about it. More than 10,000 people attended the annual Christmas light switch-on in Winchester on Tuesday. Residents from all over the county descended on the Broadway to see the one show presenter, Matt Baker, who was conducting the proceedings live on BBC One. The Christmas capital was lit up to an array of cheer and celebration. This year's displays had special sparkling lights, with organisers, Winchester BID, hoping they would give the city that extra special Christmas feeling. Chief Executive of the BID, Catherine Turness, was delighted that everything went according to plan. She added, "For me, the Christmas lights signal the start of Christmas. It's great to see so many people turning out to witness it. We hope that everyone will come to the city and purchase their gifts in our shops." The crowd joined in the countdown before the plunger switched on the lights, although it took about 20 seconds for them to come on. Conducted in tandem with Children in Need's Rickshaw Challenge, Mr. Baker had been cycling since 2 a.m. from Bristol, a 74-mile journey, the longest in the fundraising event's 5-year history. An exhausted Mr. Baker said, "It was amazing to see so many people in Winchester turn up to support us. It really makes a big difference to hear all the cheers as we ride into a new location, especially after such a long day on the road. Being asked to switch the Christmas lights on for the city was a great honour too." The Rickshaw Challenge involved 6 riders who took off from Land's End last Friday on a 470-mile journey to London. A host of performances from local dance groups, including Integrity, based in Winnell. Their under-14 dance group, Blueprint, took to the stage, and choreographer Darren Lee said, "To have the kids performing on TV is fantastic. They are wonderful dancers, and for them to be doing something like this is just great for them, as it's great publicity. If some of them ever wanted to get into the industry, what better place than national television?" Rachel Miller, her son Jacob, have been attending... I'm sorry, I don't understand that. Rachel Miller, her son Jacob, having attended, I think, the light turn in for 7 years, passing on, has said something about, "We are from Winchester and the event is always a special one to attend. We loved having the one show host it, and having it live on TV makes it extra special."
Now, because that was such a difficult one to read, there's a second article about the Christmas lights, which is headed, "Rickshaw Team Ride Into City to Switch on Christmas Lights." The television presenter, Matt Baker, and the riders of BBC Children in Need's Rickshaw Challenge were given the honour of switching on the Christmas lights in Winchester on Tuesday, writes Will Rimmel. "A party atmosphere ensured a great evening, as thousands of people packed the city to catch a glimpse of the famous lights, which has seen many people refer to Winchester as the Christmas capital of England." Mr. Baker broadcast the annual event live on BBC One as part of the One Show. He got the crowd, who were in good voice, to sing the Titanic theme tune, "My Heart Will Go On," for actress Kate Winslet, who was a guest on the show. Riding from 2 a.m, the Rickshaw team journeyed 74 miles from Bristol in order to get to the city. Local groups performed for the lively crowd, including Winnell Dancers Integrity. Their under-14s Blueprint group took to the stage as part of the live coverage, which the group's choreographer, Darren Lee, thought made the event even more special for them. And there's a large colour photograph of the Rickshaw Challenge team, including Matt Baker, who is described in the underscoring as the one in the blue woolly hat.
Bus stop critics have been proven wrong. New bus stops in the Itchen Valley are more popular than has been reported, says the South Downs National Park. The shelters have been constructed near Motherworthy, Couch Green and Itchen Abbas. They have sparked strong comments on social media, and one resident told the Chronicle that they are, quote, insulting to Hampshire, very crude, very drafty and very ugly, end of quote. But Patrick Appleby, chairman of Itchen Valley Parish Council and available for comment in the previous Chronicle story, said, "The council are delighted that this project has now come to fruition. The team effort between ourselves, the architects, Building Naturally, the South Downs National Park and Artisans of Wood, has provided us with some unique new bus shelters that will serve the parish for many years to come." He added, "It demonstrates what can be achieved by organisations with different needs when they are aligned to a common goal." Nick Heisman, Western Downs manager for the South Downs National Park Authority, said, "We're proud to have supported the Parish Council with their idea to upgrade their bus stops. This is a real celebration of local produce, designed and handcrafted by local talent, and a great demonstration of how supporting forestry businesses is good for both the national park and the local economy." The bus stops were made by Artisans of Wood, based in Petersfield. Dullan Walker from the firm said, "This has been a really interesting project to work on. Our challenge was to translate designs into finished bus shelters using timber in its natural form, laths and clinker-style roofing, all coppiced from locally managed woodlands. The team of local master craftsmen who worked on the project are all really proud to have been part of it. And it's great to see the SDNPA, that is the Western Downs, the South Downs National Park Authority, commissioning projects like this where every element comes from within the park. Each shelter has been locally designed by Building Naturally, handcrafted by Artisans of Wood, and use local wood. Western cedar from Cowdray, sweet chestnut from Rogate, and oak from Elstead."
High earners at council increase. The number of managers taking home £50,000 or more at Hampshire County Council has increased, despite redundancies. Annual accounts show there were 382 managers earning between £50,000 and £180,000 in 2014-15, up on 345 in 2013-14, and 322 in 2012-13, a hike of 18% in the space of 2 years. When the number of senior employees receiving substantial redundancy payments is included, the total number rises to 430 in 2014-18. At the same time, the Tory council is spending millions on management consultants, including £18 million with Deloitte in 2014-16 to, quote, support transformational change, unquote, as previously revealed by the Chronicle. The increase in higher earners comes after the council culled about 25% of manager posts in 2011 and 2012. Jonathan Isaby, chief executive of Taxpayers Alliance, said, "Taxpayers are still paying far too much for the bloated bureaucracies and middle management that have been established in town halls." Winchester councillor Martin Todd, a leading opposition Liberal Democrat on the county council, commented, "When there's such extreme pressure on services for children and care for the elderly and disabled, you have to wonder why the council is increasing spending on management." Councillor leader Roy Perry said £240 million worth of savings had been achieved since 2008 and management cut by 25%. He said, any post deleted as a result of redundancy cannot be re-recruited to in its identical form. Aspects of the work may still need to be done, and so a modified personnel structure will be put in place, invariably at a lower cost. The City Council paid out £475,100 in redundancy payments to 26 staff last year. Seven employees received redundancy payments between £20,000 and £120,000.
Gang warfare in lawless prison. Gang warfare, fuelled by legal highs, has left Winchester Prison lawless, a former inmate has claimed, amid widespread fears for the state of the jail. A recent convict has told Chronicle how he feared for his life, alleging that ringleaders terrorised young inmates and made thousands of pounds selling toxic drugs. Legal high dealers would intentionally go to jail to exploit addicted prisoners, he claimed, making up to £5,000 during 28-day stints behind bars. The ex-prisoner, who's in his 40s, fears retribution and has asked to remain anonymous. He is the latest whistleblower to come forward after the Chronicle reported warnings from the prison's watchdog, Prison Officers Association, and a former Winchester chaplain that the jail was rife with problems. A report by the Independent Monitoring Board last month said gang violence and legal highs were a huge concern, but added that progress had been made. The former inmate spent 2 months on B Wing this year after a conviction for assault. He described one incident where two prisoners were attacked by 12 fellow convicts. They had been sliced open with some sort of blade, I said to the screw prison officer. Can't you see what's happening? He seemed totally oblivious to me, saying that, turning his back and walking away. I didn't feel safe in there at all. My punishment was to have my freedom taken away from me, not to fear for my life every day. The ex-prisoner said short staffing left guards too scared to tackle lawless violence and drug dealing. Gang violence on B-Wing, nicknamed Beirut, is driven by race tensions and the spice trade, he said. You've got a guy stood on B-Wing with a T-shirt on, with spice rep on the back, blatantly advertising it, he said. You can buy that in the head shops for £500 or £600 an ounce, and some of these guys are coming in for 28 days specifically to sell the drug and making £4 or £5 grand. The quick-hitting substance, smoked like cannabis, is smuggled in using Kinder eggs and paid for using contraband mobile phones, the ex-inmate said. A prison service spokesman said, we take a zero-tolerance approach to drugs in prison. There are already robust measures in place at Winchester to detect drugs, including the use of search dogs. From November the 10th, new laws see that those who smuggle packages over prison walls face up to 2 years in prison. The police will have the powers to arrest anyone who smuggles any package into prison, including by drone. Changes have also been proposed to the Psychoactive Substances Bill, which, if passed, will make it a criminal offence for anyone, including visitors, to possess a psychoactive substance in prison and see them face up to 2 years in prison.
Abandoned bike scheme. Looking for a bargain bike or good quality second-hand bicycle? Winchester City Council has recently donated 20 used ones to Winchester charity Emmaus. The council regularly gets reports of abandoned bikes, and councillors recently approved a policy for dealing with them. Abandoned bicycles are labelled with a notice giving the owner 2 weeks to remove them. If the bike remains, it is removed and stored for 3 months. If it still is not claimed, the bicycle can then be disposed of. Bikes which are in a reasonable condition are offered to local charities for reconditioning and selling on, whilst others may need to be recycled. The council's street care team delivered 20 bikes to Emmaus. The proceeds generated from their sale will help Emmaus with its work to provide a home and work for its 22 residents. There are two local Emmaus Hampshire shops, both selling donated second-hand goods. One of the shops is at Emmaus Community at Bar End, and the other is in Lee Road, East Lee. Councillor Frank Pearson, portfolio holder for Environment, Health and Wellbeing, said, "This year's corporate campaign for the council is the Great Waste. This policy on abandoned bicycles will ensure that many bikes which might once have been scrapped will be given a new lease of life."
Mother, 34, died of anaphylaxis. A mother died of an allergic reaction, a coroner's court has ruled. Rachel Rocky, 34, was found dead at her home in St Paul's Hill, Winchester, with her nine-month-old son crying upstairs on August the 11th last year. Winchester Coroner's Court heard previously she was allergic to nuts, but it's not known if she had eaten any before she collapsed. The inquest was told how Mrs. Rocky and her husband Stephen had separated when their son was 7 weeks old and he had gone to live in London, where he also worked. The two had met at university and had been together for 15 years when he admitted to having an affair, and they parted, the inquest heard. The court was told that 2 weeks before her death, Mrs. Rocky received a letter from her husband's solicitor asking for consideration for a divorce. The inquest heard during an earlier hearing from Mrs. Rocky's mother, Angela Elsie, who said the split had put her daughter under stress, and the last time she saw her, she appeared weary and frantic. That hearing, on April the 30th, was adjourned, whilst scientists carried out tests to determine whether Mrs. Rocky had suffered an allergic reaction. The inquest later heard how Professor Andrew Walls, based at Southampton General Hospital, died of an anaphylactic shock. Coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of death by natural causes, adding that he believed Mrs. Rocky had consumed a meal and suffered an allergic reaction.
Silver Hill back in court. The developer of Silver Hill has won the right to appeal against the findings of a judicial review that said that aspects of the scheme had been handled unlawfully. The High Court had ruled that aspects of the procurement for the £150 million development breached regulations, but the new decision by the Court of Appeal means that the issue will return to court in the next few months. The controversial scheme for shops, flats, parking and offices has planning permission and construction work is due to start soon. Anti-Silver Hill campaigner Kim Gottlieb said yesterday, "Fundamentally, nothing has changed. As things stand, it is still the case that the council breached the procurement regulations and acted unlawfully. The council remains in the clink, although they will undoubtedly try to spin the story. The objective of saving Winchester from both of these appalling, damaging schemes is far too important for us to be diverted by this technical setback." Councillor Stephen Godfrey, City Council leader, said, "I am pleased that this judgment of a senior court has drawn attention to the complexity of such a case. Whilst some may continue to assert that the council has acted unlawfully, it is clear that there are significant questions of law to be tested. The courts will examine further matters which form the basis of the legal challenge to the council's actions and clarify our legal position, which is now not clear."
Police station on the move. The blue lamp will be switched off this weekend. The police station on North Walls is shutting after 50 years, but the lamp will be illuminated at the new base at Mottisfont Court on the corner of the High Street and Tower Street. Simon Hayes, Police and Crime Commissioner, and Andy Marsh, Hampshire Chief Constable, will officially mark the opening with a ribbon cutting in front of the newly renovated building at 9:15 a.m. on Monday, November the 16th. The North Wall's base was opened in 1966 as a replacement to the old Winchester City Police Station at the Guildhall, where officers had been based since the late 19th century. The neighbourhood policing teams and police community support officers will be based at Mottisfont Court, closer to the city centre. North Walls will be sold off as part of the PCC's cost-cutting estate strategy. Hampshire Constabulary has already cut £55 million in the last 4 years and must save a further £25 million by 2017. Southampton University is a potential buyer for the North Walls site as it is next door to the Coutts School of Art. Housing developers will also view it as a prime sort. As a prime site. And there is a colour picture of the new base at Mottisfont Court with the blue pillars holding up the new building and the word police written on it. So, and there is a blue lamp outside as well. And so there's no mistaking where the new position is.
Major dementia care centre plan given the green light. Councillors have approved a major care facility which could create 60 new jobs. Charity Brendan Care wants to build a new dementia care centre near Otterbourne to give specialist nursing care, independent living and support to sufferers. Eastleigh Borough councillors supported the proposal for it to be located on undeveloped grassland at the top of Otterbourne Hill, close to Junction 12 of the M3. The centre would provide residential and dementia nursing care for 64 people, along with 5 one-bedroom and 15 two-bedroom supported apartments for dementia sufferers and their partners. There would also be a community resource hub for centre users and residents in the local area, with clubs and activities to keep them active. It can also provide planned and emergency respite care. The site on the edge of Otterbourne and Albrook would be accessed through the Yellow Dot Nursery. Alongside the 2- and 3-storey facility are plans for a landscaped area of public open space between the centre and Pitmore Copse. 2 woods could also be accessed by the public managed by Albrook Parish Council. The site was previously approved for a dementia care scheme in 2012. Brendan Care says this facility would replace its home at the old parsonage, Otterbourne, which would eventually close. Its independent living flats would be unaffected. Residents raised concerns about being overlooked, traffic and noise and light pollution. However, others supported the scheme as good use of the land. The plans received unanimous support from councillors on Tuesday night.
Soapbox provided. Could Winchester's City Council leader be bringing his message of financial prudence and a soapbox to a street near you? Councillors are cooking up exciting ways to explain to residents the pressures on local government finance, with uncertainty looming over Chancellor George Osborne's spending review and regional devolution plans due to be announced soon. At the full council meeting in the Guildhall last Wednesday evening, Councillor Stephen Godfrey proposed imitating his father, a Bible-thumping Christian preacher on the streets of Battersea, South London, to get the word out about expected cuts to the Guildhall's funding, which are in turn likely to impact on council services. However, he added, I'm not sure the people of Winnell and Hyde would welcome my presence in that way.
Schoolboys singing triumph. A Winchester pupil is celebrating after wowing judges with his vocal skills. Angus Benton has won the prestigious BBC Radio 2 Young Choristers of the Year 2015 competition. The 11-year-old, who is a student at the Pilgrim School, the choir school of Winchester Cathedral, sings as a querister for the world-famous Winchester College Chapel Choir. Angus is carrying on the success of former queristers, as in the past 14 years of this national competition. A querister has reached the final no fewer than 10 times, and he is the fifth querister to win. The eight final contestants from all around the UK performed in front of a panel of highly acclaimed judges at St Martin in the Fields, London. The final, hosted by Diane Louise Jordan, was broadcast in a special programme on Radio 2. Chaired by the world-renowned composer John Rutter, the judges on the night were international choral director and promoter of young voices, Susie Digby, OBE, choral director and arranger Simon Lowell, and singer and songwriter Dion Bromfield. Simon Lowell said, "It never ceases to amaze me how these young choristers produce such incredible musical performances. The standard in 2015 has been really excellent. Choral music is clearly still very much alive and kicking." And there is a colour photograph of young Angus Bentham, obviously singing. He's dressed in his white ruff and white cassock under cassock, and he's obviously singing for the BBC Radio 2, and it looks very, very enticing.
Councillor to move out of area. A Winchester City Councillor has moved to Weymouth for family reasons. Liberal Democrat Councillor Rose Prowse has kept her seat in St Luke Ward and travels between the two towns. Attending full council on November the 4th, she told the Chronicle she had, quote, a good personal reason, unquote, for attending to family matters. Councillor Prowse of Battery Hill Stanmore has yet to decide whether to run in next May's council elections.
Speed volunteers. The police are on the hunt for volunteers to help tackle speeding in Winchester. Community Speed Watch is coordinated by the police in partnership with local authorities. They are looking for people to give up a few hours each month to help.
City falls silent for the glorious dead. Winchester fell silent as hundreds gathered on Sunday to pay their respects to the fallen heroes who fought for their country in wars past and present. At Winchester Cathedral, nearly 1,000 people joined the Royal British Legion. Members of the armed forces and cadets, scouts, cub groups and dignitaries for a moving service. It was attended by senior military personnel, including the former head of the army, General the Lord Dannatt, who gave an address. After the service, the cathedral emptied and hundreds remained for the traditional wreath-laying at the war memorial. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clare, Winchester MP Steve Brine, and the Bishop, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, and former Marine Commando Vincent Horton, all laid wreaths. Across Hampshire, members of the public joined the Royal British Legion and dignitaries to remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice.
Blaze of colour is spectacular. The sky above Winchester was awash with colour as thousands enjoyed a spectacular fireworks display. More than 20,000 people gathered in the city for the 57th Winchester Bonfire and Fireworks. They raised an estimated £40,000. In Winchester, thousands of people joined in the fun before the main event as a torchlight procession started from the Broadway and went along the High Street, Jury Street, North Walls and through to River Park. When the fireworks kicked off, the sounds of excited screams from onlookers was drowned out by colourful rockets lighting up the night sky in a stunning 25-minute display. Connor Gately, chairman of Winchester Round Table, hailed the event as a huge success.
Homes complete. Families will move into the first of 21 new council houses in Stanmore in January, civic chiefs have said. The new Queensgate scheme in Stanmore Lane is nearing completion and will be available at 70% of market rates. They're looking really fabulous, council leader, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, told a meeting last Wednesday.
Value dispute is ongoing. The Barton Farm scheme remains locked in a land value dispute months after the Chronicle revealed negotiations are delaying the 2,000 home project. House building has yet to begin because the landowner, Winchester College, is asking a higher price than developer Calla is willing to pay. The Chronicle reported in August how independent experts had been brought in to set the price of the first tranche of land. However, no decision has been made, and civic chiefs do not know when it will come, a meeting heard last week. Councillor Vicky Weston, deputy leader, told the council the planning consent has been implemented, and as soon as Carla Holmes and the college have completed their negotiations, Carla will mobilise to begin the first house building phase of the development. We do not know precisely when this will be, and therefore the site is being secured until a start is made. It will fuel uncertainty following concerns that delay will affect the council's ability to repel speculative planning applications. Councillor Weston was responding to a question by Councillor Jane Rutter.
Police hunt gang. Police are looking for four men who try to break into a garden machinery business near Winchester. They attempted to cut the boundary fencing into the premises on Alsford Road near Mourne Hill between 12:10 and 12:30 a.m. last Wednesday, but the CCTV monitoring company alerted the police. The gang escaped, and the police are urging anyone who saw any suspicious people or vehicles in the Alsford Road and Eastern areas to call them on 101.
Dementia diagnosis offered to residents. Doctors in Hampshire are encouraging people to come forward if they're worried about their memory. Figures from the Health and Social Care Information Centre, HSCIC, have revealed many people are undiagnosed with dementia. HSCIC estimates there are 3,387 people living in Hampshire with memory problems who may benefit from a dementia diagnosis.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to all our various technical teams. And thank you also to our readers, who are Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.